And welcome to this episode of G220 Radio. My name is Mike, and as you can see, we're on episode number 433, and we have titled this, What Has Athens to Do with Hallmark? The title is stolen, rephrased from a church father, in which What Has Athens to Do with Jerusalem, and talking about kind of philosophy. And that, so we're seeing Athens as the height of philosophy and thinking, of worldly thinking. And that is what we seek to do today. So with me is Nathaniel. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I saw all over the Facebook today something called Parler. And the good news is that I locked down my screen name on that. So still, I remain across every social media platform, including Gmail, Natty P Original.
Well, that's exciting.
Someone's going to catch on, and they're gonna steal it just to get back at me someday.
Yeah.
I'm not popular enough to have any serious enemies, though.
So, as we mentioned, this episode 433. And we are going to be really talking about graduation cards and what they say, and kind of, is this good wisdom? Should this be something that we should be intentionally looking at and seeking, or is there something better, something else that we can do it, and just kind of evaluate the claims that they make and then evaluate them from a biblical perspective. So Nathaniel, tell us, why did you, this is your topic,
right?
Why did you want to talk about it?
Well, I was, obviously graduation season is upon us. It's strange. The other week I actually had a drive-by graduation party going down my mom's street. But what really was the impetus for this show is I was strolling through the Giant Eagle recently, which is a supermarket, in case you don't have Giant Eagles where you are viewing from. It's I know it's like a big supermarket, but they had the graduation cards out, and there were some that caught my eye because it was I don't know, what do we call these? These are like worldly platitudes. We have Christian platitudes.
Cliches.
Cliche platitude. Little phrases that are kind of empty and hollow. And they caught my eye, but they're repeated sort of. I guess that's probably what makes a cliche a cliche. But I'm just, I picked up three of them and took pictures of them because I wanted to, at least for myself, look behind them and see what are they saying, because everything in them is really it's a phrase that you would say, oh yeah, that sounds nice, but what does it actually mean? What are we actually saying? What are we communicating?
Yeah. And I think it's important because kind of to start out with is, Hallmark, as much as they are in fact dealing with a worldview, and they're going to present something with it. And so when we think about and when we consider these cards, we have to realize that Hallmark is, whether they believe it or not, trying to push a worldview in which they're trying to get people to do what they want and to think in a certain way for it.
Right. And even everybody's doing that. I mean, it's not as sinister as it sounds sometimes. Sometimes it is, but we all have our what are called presuppositions or our operating assumptions. Or as you called it, a worldview. What is our basic foundational belief set that impacts how we go about our lives, how we see everything in the world? what are those things we take for granted, those unargued premises, every time we do anything that we do.
Yeah. And just a quick note, we're having some problems on my end. If it's too bad, we'll have a better recording set up later for it. And I apologize for that here right now. So now with that, let's get into the first card. So which one do you want to do first?
Let's do the simplest one first. Let's do be who you are, do what you do.
Okay. Be who you are, do what you do. For those watching on YouTube, you can now see the card. It's nice, bright yellow with a globe in the middle and blue with it, with a little hat on top of the globe. So what was your first initial thought when you kind of saw this card?
Well, my first thought is, it's not really, it's kind of a nothing throwaway phrase, right? Like, be who you are. Who else will I be? Who other than me am I going to be? You know what I mean? I suppose if I was going to go to college and learn to be a thespian, I could pretend to be someone else, but I would still be who I am, pretending to be someone else, you know, and do what you do. What else would I do other than what I'm doing? I mean, yeah. I can't do anything else other than what I'm doing. Because even if I stop what I'm doing right now, I will then be doing that thing that I pick up and do next. And so yeah. That's my first thought.
So part of me kind of first thinking on this is like it would depend on who I'm saying this. Like just taking our current events happening right now, do we really want like anarchists to be who they are?
Right.
You know, and really this is probably coming more with an inclusivist with it. There may be, you know, kind of openness with it. Just be you, just do what you do. There is a sense, which I think we could maybe agree with, that the New Testament does give this kind of push, maybe not in this way, towards Christians.
Right.
Be who you are. You're a Christian. So be one and do what right. You do as a Christian. Well, you're to do what Christians are to be doing. And so there is good advice, but it has to be qualified. I think this is kind of where you have this this kind of cliche, this kind of thoughtless,
right,
not deep platitude.
Right. And I mean, even if I hold on to this for a moment and begin to actually think about be who you are, past just using it as a inclusivist cliche platitude, then I am instantly struck by the question, well, who am I? Because that's got to come first. Everyone presupposes that they are someone, but very rarely do we stop to think about who is that I am? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it all comes down to like your identity, and how do you know? This is like believe it or not, I think this would be one of the deeper philosophy. This is like the root philosophical question. One of them is you know, trying to figure out who am I? In Psalm 8, David David asked a question, what is man that you are mindful of him? But what am I? Who am I? And I think to answer that question is what, I don't know, want to use the phrase existential angst, because that actually means something in philosophy, but it's like an angst that we all kind of have within us.
Yeah. And so I'm kind of, this is what makes it hard, is trying to talk and deal with problems at the same time. I do think when we consider it, that obviously in Hallmark's view, that be who you are is stemming from someone who is probably somewhat morally good.
Right.
And that there is the push to continue on and being morally good with it. I think, and that's where the distinctions are, because obviously here at G220, we think men are by nature sinful and they act sinfully with it. But Hallmark isn't, I mean, that's not a Hallmark card, you know? Yeah. Hey, God's wrath is abiding upon you. And to think about it in that way. And so there is this point or aspect in thinking about how all of this works in their view, which I think leads to that, because I've been there, but I would not be surprised to see Hallmark have pride related, LGBTQ related cards to promote coming out and doing all of and celebrating all of that which God has forbidden. Again, when you think of those cards in relation to now this card, well, now be who you are is just act upon what you are within your nature.
Right. And that's where we deviate from the biblical worldview, because we all know that our nature from the very start is corrupt. That's over and over in the Psalms and then in Romans 3, that they have all become corrupt. They've become altogether worthless, you know? And so if we act on our nature and we be who we are, we're in a whole heap of trouble. And so what we see in the Bible is that the very problem with us is who we are. And I think part of it too is from this culture that we're in. We've kind of dismissed God, even back with Nietzsche, back then, and even maybe even further back. But when we dismiss God, it's reduced to what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15, I think it is. Where maybe I'm wrong about the site, but he says, Christ isn't resurrected. We wasted, everything's in vain. And then I think it's in the same place where he says, eat, drink, and for tomorrow we die. He's quoting probably like Epicureans, I think. But yeah, everything's meaningless, kind of almost like a vanity, chasing after the wind kind of thing once we dismiss God.
Yeah, and we can see then the full nature in which people dismiss God with. And I think just seeing it all around, especially in communist type nations.
Right.
So what was your next card?
My next card, let's change it up for a minute because the other one has Be Who You Are in it a little bit too, but it to a different slant. Next card, if you can conceive it, your heart can believe it, and you can achieve it.
What was some of your initial thoughts?
Well, this is very Seussical. Dr. Seuss, nice little rhyme there. I wonder if it's actually from Dr. Seuss, but it's a nice rhyme. But I learned this growing up, actually, I Think I Can, The Little Engine That Could, was a story that I thought learned growing up. Also, I learned that I could be anything that I wanted when I grow up, and especially that I was special. And it's almost like a pull yourself up by a bootstraps kind of card, only really nice and sentimental.
Yeah, I think you see it to bring it in relation to even maybe something that is better happening with American space flight taking off of American soil again.
Yeah.
Some of those actions and what people were kind of promoting is the excitement around this in order to let kids dream about being an astronaut and to kind of push them to become one. I mean, you hear it. I don't know if you heard it. I heard it in school. You know, if you try hard enough, you can be the president.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think, I mean, this has definitely been something. It's been around. It maybe falls a little bit on the prosperity gospel side. Maybe not as much as speaking it into existence, right. Not going with that. But differently, this idea of just if you work hard, you will do it.
Right.
And so you do have some of that playing in it, which I think has some serious downfalls when you consider that we don't know what holds to the future, and we shouldn't be the fool who says, I'm going to build more barns, and then God says, you fool, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to take your life today, and not be able to do it. And James, in relation, talking about planning, but understanding that God's providence is still what rules.
Right. Yeah, most definitely. And just definitely see, like you said, some of the same thinking, the new thought slash, like Mary Baker Eddy, came up with it back in the 1800s with, like, you don't want to think bad thoughts because, your mind, your spiritual, she went a little different direction than this card does. But, if you speak about the negative, then it actually brings the negative into fruition. And it's like got some, power of positive thinking. It was that Peel, the president's pastor, I think is who wrote that book, but it's like, and like positively thinking that if I can just think my goal and eliminate the negative thoughts, then I'll move forward. And I just gotta, be positive, you know, because if I'm positive, positive things come my way. what it really kind of gives to the graduate, if we give him a card that says, if you can conceive it, you can believe it and achieve it, is almost it's almost like the same power that God has. If he can think, if he thinks an idea, then then that thing that he speaks comes into existence, and it's like giving you power. Like, this is your ticket, graduate, to shape your reality. And so even with the last card, that's these kind of come out of the existentialism that drapes our culture, where the first thing is existence. I know that I exist as an individual, and then comes my essence, and it's up to me to shape the essence of who I am, and find true freedom by doing whatever I want to do.
Yeah. And this this doesn't mean that one shouldn't work hard.
Right.
And that one shouldn't plan for it. But I think even with this card, especially when you consider most people who go to college with a declared major will change their major before they graduate. I did it. My wife has done it. I know others who have done it. And so there is this aspect that you can conceive it. So just to use my example, when I was getting out of high school, going into college, I went to Iowa State, and the official name on my degree was Aerospace, Aeronautical, and Astronautical Engineering. For short, we called ourselves AeroEs. My goal was to work for Boeing or Lockheed in their top secret facilities, designing military aircraft. That is what I wanted to do. That is what I conceived that my life would be, that I would be living in sunny Palmdale, California, working on Air Force Plant 42, building engineering fighter planes. I believed I could do that. Now, I joined the military. I went to England, so I couldn't do my schooling anymore. God saved me during the spans also. And I had a legitimate change of desires with it. But I think, so we need to go that what we think may not always be where we lead, where we go. And, so again, this cliche of sorts with it, because we don't know our futures. We can maybe conceive of it. We may even understand the hard work that is required of it. But that doesn't always mean we achieve it. And it's not this, if you conceive it, if you believe it, therefore you will achieve it. There are many people who work hard and still don't achieve what they're looking for. And there's a sense in which we should be, as Christians, willing to accept that and understanding, well, maybe that is not God's will for my life.
Right. I've had lots of conceptions in my life. Let me see. My first conception was that I was going to be a superstar football coach and a history teacher, and neither of those things worked out for various reasons. And then I was going to be a Marine Corps officer, and that didn't work out. And then I conceived of being a fighter, and I got knocked out. And then I conceived of being a lawyer, and I dropped out. So now conceive of other things, and whether they come to fruition or not is obviously to be seen what God has in store, you know. But like obviously some of those dreams and goals and aspirations were before I was a Christian, and some of the things didn't work out because I made choices before I was a Christian that maybe I wouldn't make now. But I do use all those experiences and knowledge. So it's not to say it's bad to have adventures like I've had, but I guess it's like some of it's to not being able to grasp your own finitude and limitations, because I was going to be a really good college football player. I went to the best Division III school in the country, and I got hurt. So when that happened, I had conceived and believed that I would continue to be really good at football like I was in high school, and that I would get to have a championship ring and all this stuff, and be able to be the football coach that I wanted to be when I was in high school. And so that was a really big hit. Like, that was really tough whenever I couldn't play football anymore because I couldn't get strong or fast without getting hurt. So that was really, that kind of stuff happens, you know, and if we let the graduate's hope rest on, if you believe this, you will achieve this. That's not good either. And along with the football thing, I thought I was going to go to a Division I school because I mean, I was reasonably good. I don't know that I was Division I school good. In addition to that, I'm only like 6 foot tall and I played offensive line, and to go to a Division I school to be a guard, you want to be somewhere in the realm of at least 6'3". And so even my physical frame wasn't good enough, you know? So there are certain limitations that it's good to be aware of.
Yeah. 6'3" and what? 270?
Yeah. I had the 270 because they said you need to be really big, and but not the 6'3".
So, yeah. And I think kind of to think through it, there is wisdom in planning. But it's good to have many counselors.
Right.
And to work and to think about what you want to do. So as a graduate, don't spurn the wisdom of older people. Don't be one who Solomon's son and go with those who are near you. Listen to the advice of others and to look at it. Just in my own experience, one of my final classes at seminary was an internship, and I had it with my pastor. And my pastor kind of told me, after I was telling him some dreams, like, look, it's just not going to happen. All these people are getting PhDs, and I wanted to teach, and there's just no teaching positions open. That's just not what's happening. In fact, there's less positions being opened up right now as schools close and whatnot. And so you need someone that helps you to think about it and even knows what's going on, and to make great plans, and that most people are normal and that's okay. And as long as you do the work to the best of your ability in a way that glorifies God, God will honor that and bless that. So here we go. Ready for the third one?
Third and final card.
So this one says, well, be who you are, do what you love, make a difference, change the world.
Yes. So we're starting off with be who I am. Check. Mm-hmm. Do what I love. I don't know about that one, but that is advice I have received in the past. Never work mm-hmm. a day in your life if you do what you love. None of the things that I've loved in the past have really been profitable. So that wasn't that great of advice. Make a difference. That was definitely a goal I had for my life. And this one's the kicker. Change the world. That one, I don't know. What I see in this card are very many things that are dangerous if you take it the wrong direction. Depending on what goals these four platitudes could be innocuous and guided by good presuppositions, or they could really take you off path. So we've kind of talked about be who you are. So who am I? If we were going to correctly look at this card, we've kind of talked about that. We need to know what is man. Calvin said that true wisdom is being able to see myself as I am, to see God as he is, but I can't do either one without doing the other one. So it's kind of a paradox. But
not a paradox.
What am I trying to say? A catch.
Circular.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. It would be a little bit circular, but and it's a true statement. It's the good kind of circular. It's just how do we open this circle up? And it's through special revelation, you know, and through the Holy Spirit's prompting, obviously. But point being, if I'm going to see myself for who I am, to be able to grasp God for who he is, I go to the special revelation. Genesis 1 says that I'm made in God's image. Genesis 3:19 says that I'm dust, which is explained further in the scriptures, where Psalm 39 says that that every man walks, or behold, my days are but a few handbreadths, and my lifetime is nothing in your sight. Surely every man is at his best of breath. So it's like good for this be who you are to have a healthy view of yourself and your finitude, especially in view of the immensity of God, who's the one that's measured the hot waters in the hollow of his hand. As Psalm 40 says, who doesn't take counsel, whose spirit is not directed by anyone, who is not taught by anyone, to whom the nations are as nothing and meaningless. So being able to see the immensity of God, the smallness of myself, is part of the first steps in correcting that first one. I don't want to talk about the whole card, Mike, so I'll let you jump in and you can pick some of these apart.
Yeah. So do what you love. I think there is truth in it.
Right.
If we understand the aspect of what is love or enjoyment, probably is what they are, what I find most enjoyment in. And part of that is, I think, understanding not only do what you love, but being content in what you're doing to love. Obviously, the advice here is spurring to one to think about, what do I enjoy doing and how do I make a living? How can I obviously this doing what I love is to make a difference and change the world. There's a step up. But to also think that I may love video gaming. And people have made careers out of becoming professional gamers. The likelihood someone is going to make a living being a professional gamer, including winning $1 million prize winnings, is very slim and very probably not going to happen. I like disc golf. I am not going to be one of the best disc golf players in the world. That's no matter how much I tried to play, it's not going to happen. And so there is a sense to do what you love, but to understand that that love needs to be catered to and balanced with. If you have a family and you do what you love at your job, there may be a tendency to work more and harder. Well, that's not healthy for your family. And so there is, so we've been thinking about to do what you love, as the card says, one needs to consider that. But there is, again, wisdom in finding something that brings you joy to do, and that even when it gets tough, you can still find the enjoyment of it and to bring some sustain, bring sustainability. And even if we look at the Apostle Paul, he's a missionary and he loved, there's a sense in which he loved doing what he did. You see this in the letters, and yet he was stoned to many times. People try to stone him to death. He was shipwrecked, and he had all these other ways. Now with, by the grace of God and other, the Holy Spirit's leading and prompting, there is, he was able to survive all of that. And so it's not a complete analogy with it. But finding something that you like to do and understanding that vocation is a calling from God. And it's not just a pastor. I know many Protestant traditions kind of elevate the position of a pastor as kind of like the high calling. And it is a high calling. But the church is not just pastors. It's other people too. And they have a work of a ministry. And that work of the ministry is supported by the people in the pews, not only financially giving to help support it, but also giving of their time. And this is not to say that a job is just to support the ministry, but that a job itself is a way for a Christian to minister, to share the gospel with coworkers in a way that is responsible and within the guidelines of your company. And to, so then not only can you do what you like to do, say working on Excel spreadsheets all day, that can also give you a platform, being content in what you're doing, enjoying what you're doing, and be able to also be a good witness for your coworkers in hope that you can talk to them about spiritual things. You'll have to take the lead in that, although I had plenty of people previous job come talk to me. But just also just being open in what you believe about the gospel.
Right. Right. And I think that really plays in the idea that you brought up of being contented in your vocational calling, whatever that may be, whether it's mathematician, pastor, wife, mother, nurse, any number of vocations that one could have, stations of life, being content. I find that whenever it's not so much that you are doing what you love, is that you love the one for whom you do it, right? One of my adventures that I've had over the course of my life is I worked at a convenience store. And that's where I really learned how to work like a Christian, because it's not really a prestigious job. It's not a fun job some of the time. But I learned that if I was going to please God and work like I learned to work like a Christian and learned to enjoy the job for the most part, because I love the one for whom I was doing the work, you know? And so I think that that's a helpful, that you mentioned contentment. And even in that, so flowing from the contentment of loving the one for whom you do the work, whether that's God himself or our neighbor, as well, that being contented in that station helps us to make the actual kind of difference, in the world change, as it were, that God has in store for us, you know, because a lot of times whenever people say change the world or make a difference, what they really mean is what they said in Genesis 11, let us make a name for ourselves. It's kind of an idolatrous sort of a thing. Like I want to be that guy. They don't so much want to make a difference as they want to be the guy who made the difference, you know, or the girl. But whenever we're contented in whatever station God has us, whether it's mom, whether it's dad, whether it's out in the field or in the office, whatever station, you know, whenever we're contented there and work diligently, we make those little differences. Maybe they're small and imperceptible to us, but it's the means that God uses to change things in the world. A lot of times, the way that he changes a culture, and the way that he does change culture is starting with the heart. It doesn't start with a big revival a lot of times, and even the big revivals start with one changed heart, and then a changed heart within that community, between lots of individual hearts turning to God or whatever, and individual diligence, you know. Coming together, and then you see the big change over a long period of time, maybe even years later. You know, the Puritans prayed for revival in the 1600s, decades before the Great Awakening. So they no doubt their prayers came up as a memorial offering before God, as he brought about that great revival through the famous people who perhaps who would say were world changers, like Edwards and Whitfield, you know. But we had decades of people who came before them making a little difference and a little difference and a little difference. And then you see a big change of the world as many, many come to Christ on the dawn of a huge conflict between Britain and America. And so many, many have who died in that war, no doubt, had their lives changed for the better.
Yeah. And I'm reminded of a story. I believe it's George the Evangelist, not our previous co-host, George Alvarado, but a George out of Australia. And he dedicated to tell the gospel or present a tract to 10 people every day. And someone was and God's providence, saved by them, and then started searching for this person, who he was, and found others that had the same experience. And for decades, this gentleman would try to give the gospel to 10 people on the streets. I want to say Sydney, if I remember this story right. And changed a lot of people, made a difference in a lot of people's lives. And I think sometimes, as you were mentioning, we have grand visions that God would use us like a Whitfield or a Jonathan Edwards or a Wesley or Spurgeon or whoever it may be that we look up to. But that story helps us. And what we see is that God shows his faithfulness in the little things that we do when we're faithful to him. So how can a mom make a difference and change the world? Well, it's raising her children in the fear and admiration of the Lord. How can I, as a lay person in my church, make a difference? Well, it's investing in other people and having other people invest in me. And the difference isn't maybe going to solve poverty. The difference may not bring about a nation who praises the Lord in one unified voice. But that's not what God has called us to do. God has called us to be faithful in our tasks, to go about, and that is where the difference is made. You can maybe use political language that it's like a grassroots movement. And to think about, to make a difference is to change the people around you, especially those you have influence over, and to point them to Christ so that they will point others to Christ. And because there's a sense in which the world will change. And we know this world will change because God tells us it will. The old will pass away. The new will come. And that's not the change this card is talking about. Probably thinking through it, kind of mention it. It's probably political change, trying the world a better place. And not saying that as Christians, we shouldn't fight injustices and help people who are in poverty. But to also understand that our main focus is the spread of the gospel. And to call that, we don't do it without exception to it, dealing with people in poverty. But it is what drives us in all that we do with it. And that small changes can make big differences. And when we consider our own call to be faithful and to, in a sense, maybe change the world that is immediately around us in a way that is glorifying by God as he deems fit in his providence.
Right. Sometimes the big world change is due to our lack of short-sightedness and patience, and even in a more twisted way, our self-centeredness. You know, I want what I want and I want it now, but those little deeds of faithfulness, you know, it talks about God's faithfulness to generations in the Old Testament. You know, Abraham never got to see the promised land. Neither did Isaac, neither did Jacob. They didn't get to see it in its glory, as it were. Joseph didn't get to see the promised land, as it were. They had to carry his bones there, out of Egypt when Moses came to deliver them, and even Moses didn't get to see the promised land. Yet all these men were faithful servants. They trusted God, and you know, even though they didn't get to see Canaan changed, they still, without them, there would have been no Israel, so to speak. Obviously, taking into account all of our reform presuppositions when I say that, but God, they were God's instruments for that change, though they never actually got to see the world change themselves.
Yeah. And to think about it, even in Spurgeon's own life, he credits his salvation to his mother who prayed for him. Mm. And the difference, she didn't get to see the difference in which Spurgeon made in the impact of people, but she did make a difference.
Right.
And there is always the looking and pointing to being faithful, and she gets honored because of how Charles Spurgeon's talked about his mother.
Right.
And to and how God used her with it. So we got about 5 minutes left on this show. So, Nathaniel, we've kind of critiqued these cards, given a little bit of our own understanding with it. What advice would you have for recent high school graduates, college graduates?
When I was in college, I wasn't a Christian yet. I wasn't a regenerated person anyway. But I kept my Bible where I could get at it because that's what my dad told me all grown up. One of the books I read during a time of particular sorrow, where I listened to my father's advice and kept my Bible where I could get at it. And one of the books of the Bible that I read was Ecclesiastes. And I liked it because the author felt like I felt at the time. The best is the very end, verses 13 and 14 of chapter 12, which read, "Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every act into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil." And so my advice would be to, as we've said, to be excellent for the Lord, seek to glorify Him, but also enjoying Him through, you know, loving Jesus and keeping His commandments, and enjoying that blessed communion with Him through prayer, and be excellent in whatever you do as a means of worshiping the Lord, of bringing honor to His name and not making a name for yourself. But, you know, above all else, be excellent, because you are fearfully and wonderfully made, and He has made you for some purpose. Because there's no maverick molecules, as a theologian said, including all the molecules in your body. So fulfill your purpose, glorify God.
Yeah. And I would say, whether you go to a public university or a community college or even a Christian university, find a good local church and get plugged in. To find those who will help you navigate life, whether it's going from high school to college or going from college to working full time and having no homework. Being connected to a local church to help you make those transitions, especially going from high school to college, when you're leaving the home, you're getting placed, especially at a state university, a place that hates God, hates the gospel. Finding a good church, finding a good Christian ministry on campus, but most importantly, finding a good church where you can be fed, where you can be encouraged to stay strong, but also be able to ask the tough questions that are being asked at there and find the answers for it. And just having some place to go to seek refuge from the world and the environment of it is vitally important. A Christian who attends church, who fails to attend church, cuts themselves off. And they tend not to grow, but to backslide, to stop being ones who are dedicated for the cause of Christ. And to and then to also being part of a good church will help you to filter the worldviews that are presented and which are antithetical to the worldview of the gospel. It's just vitally important with that, especially considering that the statistics, which are kind of more clear than they've been used to be, is just a high amount of Christians who go to state schools lose their faith. One may argue that they maybe did not have faith to begin with, or just the lack of theological training one must have in place before going to college. The statistics are real, though.
Mm-hmm.
And going to church, maintaining faithfulness and accountability at that church will help you to get through that time, not unscathed, but hopefully as a better Christian, more mature, now with a degree and ready to spread the gospel in your workplace. So that would be my advice. Find a good local church. And to help supplement it, not to take it over, find also a good Christian fellowship in which you can develop friends that will also help you to be one ready to stand equipped against the schemes of the devils and the temptations that come out when you're in college.
Right. Always keep your Bible where you can get at it. You need it. And we're going to work on moving it from right here or the nightstand to up here. And the law of the Lord is a delight, and it keeps us from every form of evil when we treasure his word in our heart.
There'll be trees planted by streams of water, bear their fruits in their seasons. And the lovely leaves never turn grave. So that has been G220 Radio for this episode. It's episode 433. What has Athens to do with Hallmark? Join us next week at the same time, 9 p.m. Eastern, on YouTube. And you can catch the podcast on Podbean. And thanks for listening.